Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for having us all here. I'm learning a lot, and I hope I can illuminate you with some visualizations of teams. And one point which I would like to make is that most teams are highly dynamic. They are not static. They are not stuck in time. They are also part of other networks. So even they are forming their own networks, maybe 100 people networks, they're still embedded in many, many other networks, be it social networks, be it geospatial neighborhood networks, be it scholarly networks, relevant for their own topic areas, for the topic areas of all these 100 people which are now thrown together in one network. And they evolve over time. Every single day they evolve. What I would like to do in this in these 15 minutes I have, or 12, is to show you some, 12. is to show you some of the different types of questions which typically come up if you think about teams and networks, and the different levels at which you might like to study them. And I just made a simple table here. And on the first column, you will see different types of analysis which we have seen today and which are very common. And I also put there the different questions which you might like to answer there. So there are very simple statistical questions, which can become very complex, of course, also. But then there are questions about when. When do things happen? Where do they happen? What actually happens? And who is doing what with whom? And there's one question missing here, which is the why question. Why do we have the dynamics we see? Why do we have the structures we see? And this is where modeling comes into place, which is very important to many of the clients we have, but which I'm not going to cover today. Now, these different types of questions, you can try to answer at very different levels. There is the micro or individual level, maybe just the ecocentric view, me and my collaborators, my social networks, my geospatial environment, my temporal dynamics. But you could then also go on to smaller teams, a research lab, a center, maybe an institute. But then you quickly get to the college or school level or society level. And then beyond this, you are at the macro global level, and you have rather large scale data sets. And I was curious to know how many of you actually have more than a terabyte of data to work with. I know some of those gentlemen have. Raise your arm. I just want those to connect, actually, because they do actually face different challenges. So I see a little pinky back in the back. All these people which actually have more than a terabyte, they will need different types of algorithms, different types of computing infrastructure, different types of ways of going about making sense of this stream of data. And I really want to emphasize that these are real-time data streams which you're trying to understand. It's not a dump of data which you analyze from different perspectives, maybe in the beginning, but over time, you want to have a mirror to the science you fund, to the science you care about, to your own research networks. And you want to look in this mirror every single morning and say, yeah, this is what's going on, I know this, and there are some new people coming in, and these are some new Science Nature papers being published, and I'm aware of those. This is what we would like to have. Now, I'm supposed to talk about networks, and actually this should be one down. I'm supposed to talk about networks here, sorry. Try to move this one down in your mind. However, in many cases, these networks, these social networks, scholarly networks, topical networks, they actually have a very strong topical component. Many of those networks grow because we are interested in the same ideas, because we are working on the same problems. Many of them also have a geospatial component because we are in the same place and time, and therefore it's much easier to collaborate. All of them have a temporal analysis component, I would argue. And in many cases, you also do with profiling and simple types of statistical analysis. Now, unfortunately, I don't have the time to fill out every single cell in there, but I wanted to show you some of the sample studies. And I will start with those micro and meso level studies. You might be interested to look at a state, and you might like to identify pockets of innovation, how our clients here called them, and pathways which these innovative ideas take to make it into products. And you might also be very interested in the interplay of science and academia. And you can take different types of data to actually get at this. And then you can overlay it over a map of Indiana in this particular case. And you can color code it by academic and industry. You can show these relationships. You can try to animate it over time if you have multiple years for this. Similarly, you might like to understand the topical networks which people engage in. Here you have a data set of all the publications in 1 out of 3 conferences on information visualizations, information visualization notebooks, no journals. Each of the nodes here represents a researcher labeled with his or her last name. These nodes grow over time as these people publish more and more. They get darker and darker as they get more citations coming in. And the linkages represent the co-authorship relationships between those people. You might realize that people in a university setting have very different networks. Let's see if this works here. Should work. So Ben Schneiderman, working at the University of Maryland, he will have a stream of students coming in and going out, whereas people which are for what this database set captures here are at one institution, Xerox PARC, they will have very different co-authorship relationships. You also see that these networks are highly geospatially clustered. There are very few connections between those different subnetworks, typically via people which actually move from one institution to the other, to the next institution. Using the same data set, we also try to answer if science today is driven by prolific single experts or by high-impact co-authorship teams. And back then, and for this data set, it actually turns out that those which engage in meaningful collaborations and effective collaborations manage to get more citation counts if you use this as one out of many measures of impact. Recent work with Angela Smith, with Angela Soss, which is with us today, looks at the difference between doing R1 investigator-funded research, and you see co-authorship networks of these kind of research projects on the left, and on the other hand, funding larger tobacco research centers. What kind of co-authorship relationships do you get then? And again, if you have time series data, you can animate the growth of these networks over time. For those of you which are leading interdisciplinary centers, it is often very interesting to actually map your own activities. You need to know what people are in your center, what is their productivity, what kind of funding do they benefit from or did they bring in, what kind of presentations and papers are they generating, and how is this all interconnected. So for my own sake and sanity, we actually implemented this system, which is just a normal web page. So if you go to the web page itself, you will see that you can also use this as an interface to the different data sets which you might have in your center. So you can keep track of your publications, of all the funding which comes in. You can browse through this through time. But you also have all this data now interlinked in a database. And what you can then do is to do different types of analysis, which are very useful for leading a center. So for instance, you can map these co-authorship networks over time. And of course, this is a very egocentric network because I'm the director and I'm the only constant in the game. Everybody's coming in and going out again. That's what they're supposed to do. And you can do node sizing and color coding according to different network measures. You can look at investigator project networks. What are the projects that fund how many students, how many postdocs, how many staff people? You can look at funding over time. What are the big facility grants? What are the grants which are long-term? What are the short-term contracts? And you can also color and size code them by different attribute values. So these tools now become available, and I think at some point it will be possible to interlink different data sets like those to then see what the different holdings of different interdisciplinary centers are. Coming to the macro-global scale, here you would like to look at all of science. So this is one of the most recent maps of science, the UCSD map of science. You see major areas of science such as math and physics and chemistry, health professionals, medical specialties, infectious diseases, over to brain research, social sciences, humanities. There's a little peninsula here and then over back to mathematics and physics. This is the ring of science. This is a projection which is done on the surface of a sphere and then using a Mercator projection projected onto 2D, creating a base map over which other data can be laid. You also see in this particular visualization that these different areas of science, they push and pull on each other, even though this data captures only a 5-year time frame, 7.2 million papers only, but published in more than 16,000 separate journals, proceedings, and series. In these disciplines, which you see here, these are the 13 different disciplines, and you can then overlay different types of data, such as the funding portfolio or the publication portfolio of different institutions or of countries, etc. The online service for this, which you can also find online, then allows you to actually use this as a base map and click on different types of NIH funding to see them overlaid over this base map of science so that you can actually also compare funding portfolios within one funding agencies or across funding agencies. A different type of base map which you might like to look at is one of all NIH funds awarded in 2007. This is a large scale map. The online interface allows you to again zoom into different areas. You can search for cancer, for instance, to then identify who is actually funding certain types of research. So here, a base map, again, out of all this funding, using topic modeling and then laying it out using a large-scale network layout algorithm such as VXORD. And then you render this as a Google map, but you can then also use it as an interactive tool to then query for different types of data. And you will see that NCAI is the main funder of cancer research, and you can do this for other ones. The nice part is also that you can now go and actually download all this data as a CSV file. You can sort it and go from there. You will also see that down here you actually have very specific funded projects, and you can go in there and get more details on those. So again, you can zoom in, you get more specific labels for different areas. You can also then select, using the mouse, certain types, certain dots here, which are color-coded by the different institutes which fund them, and again, get a listing of those and get more details on those. So overview first, then zooming and filtering, and then details on demand. In a similar way, you can also look at what kind of academic jobs are currently available. So here again, Angela Soss used RSS feeds of job data in science and technology job market to overlay it not only on a geospatial map, but also on a map of science. So you can search for geospatially close jobs, but also for topically close jobs, using the same kind of metaphor you just saw for the NIH map. Recent work by Johan Borland and his colleagues looks at download activity data. So science not only evaluated by those which cite each other, but also by those which use scientific publications in this particular case. It turns out that there are areas, larger areas of science, which are extensively used by people outside of the academic endeavor, and which are highly important for the spreading of scientific ideas. However, in normal citation-based maps, you wouldn't see those. But if you look at download counts, then you see them. Plus, you're about 2 years ahead of the curve because the download activity data is much earlier available than citation counts. It takes a while to publish the next paper, which then can cite the existing papers. I think what we ultimately want is to look at feedback cycles in science. We want to understand how come that this one investigator had a chance to publish this high-stake paper, therefore had a much higher chance to actually get funding, therefore got the funding and had time to do more research because he got teaching buyouts. Maybe he could also hire better postdocs, better staff, more staff, develop better tools for him or herself, again, more chances to get the next high-stake publication out. We want to study those feedback cycles. And right now, we have very limited ability to do this. We also want to study the delays in the science system. What you see here is the chemical industry. And down here, you see how $1 billion of federal funding actually then leads to basic foundational research, which takes about 4 to 5 years. Then, based on this research, you have foundational research, also funded by the General Industry Fund of another $5 billion coming in. And that takes about 9 to 11 years. And then in order to actually do production development, commercialization, that takes another 5 years. So if you believe that you can fund something and in 2 years you have a product, that's typically not possible. I think we have to learn more about these delays and about these kind of feedback cycles. Those of you which want to see more of these maps of science and science studies which are communicated via visuals, I encourage you to check out the Map of Science exhibit, 10-year effort to bring these maps out of ivory towers to a more general public. The exhibit also has a number of interactive setups. Here you have a map of science and a map of the world, and you can actually click on different buttons to see who is published in what areas of the world, in what areas of science, and in the second time slice you would see who is citing this work, and in the third time slice who is citing the citing work, so you really see the impact of one person or one team or one nation on these two maps. And it is an exhibit which comes in crates. You need a forklift to get it anywhere. We are happy to get it to places, so if you're interested to host it, please let me know. It's actually relatively cheap compared to some other exhibits. It also travels in trains, if you have a train which you use to bring science to different communities. And ultimately, we would like to see those maps everywhere. Just like you have maps of the world in every classroom, I think children and us all, we need to understand how science operates. It's too important for us to not know it, to have it just as a kind of abstract, awake space in front of us. And I should say that this is the only mock-up. Everything else is actually available. One last point, in order to render terabytes of data in meaningful ways, you need extensive infrastructure. And therefore, 80% of my research and of my resources go towards infrastructures which actually help to study networks on a large scale, to study epidemics, not only of H1N1, but also epidemics of ideas, of people over time and space. And we are also building databases, open data, open code, so that everybody can transparently replicate results. And I think that's very, very important also for team science. And there are some references for you if you're interested. I understand that all of these slides will be available. And I would like to thank you.